Blog Talk Radio.
We want to welcome Mr. Clark to Eastside. We've heard so much about you, and tell you what we have done in anticipation of your arrival. Ms. Levias, your other vice principal, and I have appointed an executive committee to oversee certain areas where we have noted a need for improvement. Mr. Zarella, for example...
You may sit down, Mr. O'Malley. You think you can run this school? If you could, then I wouldn't be here, would I? No one talks in my meetings. No one! You take out your pencils and write. I want the names of every hoodlum, drug dealer, and miscreant who's done nothing but take this place apart on my desk by noon today. Reverend Slappy.
Yes, sir.
You are now the chief custodian, Reverend Slappy. You will scour this building clean. Graffiti goes up, it's off the next day. Is that clear?
Yes, sir, the very next day.
Detention students can help you. Let them scrub this place for a while. And tear down those cages in the cafeteria. You treat them like animals, that's exactly how they'll behave. This is my new dean of security, Mr. William Wright. He will be my avenging angel as you teachers reclaim the hall.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos where no time and space to exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Yes. Never get tired of that applause, folks. Once again, this is the Midweek and Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. A couple of things, folks. If you didn't recognize that voice, I'm pretty sure you did. That was Morgan Freeman from the 1989 Lean on Me classic movie. You think about what his character, who's a real-life person, Joe Clark, Principal Clark, how we desperately need more Joe Clarks. I mean, some folks have different impressions of the gentleman. Actually, we've tried to get him. He seems like he's just disappeared. I know he's still alive. I'm having difficulty trying to contact this man because I would love to have him on the show and to pick his brain as to his impressions of today's educational system. But it makes you really wonder why we can't have someone who's that disciplined running some of these schools, inner city and otherwise. And also, what kind of name is Reverend Slappy? Is Reverend Slappy. That's a weird name. I'm just saying. All right, folks, listen. A lot to get into. My partner is on the planet Vulcan waiting to be beamed on in. So while I work the controls to beam him in, let's go to a quick classic groove. You know we play Urban Alternative, but we play R&B classics as well. This is from the legendary Steve Arrington, Philly's own Steve Arrington, You Meet My Approval. We'll be back in a few moments. Groove.
The girl is hot. Her rhythm hits my spot. The girl is hot.
Oh, boy, that was hard to stop away from, folks. Again, that groove, classic groove, Steve Arrington, you meet my approval. Certainly someone who's met the approval on this show, Captain James Tiberius Kirk, winning in abeyance. Let me see if I can work the controls to beam him on in for this episode of After Earth featuring Captain Kirk. Let's get to it. He's got to be around here somewhere.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
In motion. All right. Let's do it.
Yes, I know you. I know that song right there, sir. Not to date ourselves, but Steve Arrington is a good way to move on into the show, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Classic groove. You would only, folks, once again, you will only hear this kind of stuff on After the Future and Captain Kirk. The minstrel programming will not allow Steve Arrington to be played in a game. So I'm just letting you know, this is how we get down. Folks, Midweek Review Show, the call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. As I was telling the captain before we went on air, as I was talking to him through our communicators, I was telling him that I wanted to miss a couple of things that are, that from the top of my head, some kind of extemporaneous speech, some things that have been just in my head that I want to share with an audience, with our audience. We're always trying to give our audience information. So I think it's important that we keep up with that particular meme. Number one, several books that I would recommend to our audience, I would implore them to check them out. One book is called Stylin'. It's maybe around 12 or 13 years old. I need to revisit it. I know I purchased it quite a while ago, but I always liked this book. And again, it's not styling, but the colloquial styling. And it's essentially talks about or showcases the African-American contribution in fashion and style, obviously. Go all the way from slavery to the zoot suit and beyond. And when you read this book, you know, it really gives you a great time capsule of how black folks arrived with their fashion sense. How did that happen? How did they become so? How did we become? And not taking myself out of that, but how did we become so fashionable? And it dates back to slavery times. Dates back to Africa, but you know, we were captured and. Now, because of the circumstances, we were enslaved, but we were allowed to have a combination of the Western culture, the forced Western culture, and our African sensibilities. And with those two things combined, you were able to get a fashion sense. And when you read the book is by Shane and Graham White, the White brothers. There might be a joke in there somewhere, but again, Shane and Graham White, and I guess I should give you the full title of the book, Stylin', African-American Expressive Culture from Its Beginnings to the Zoot Suit. Again, Stylin', African-American Expressive Culture from Its Beginnings to the Zoot Suit. And I remember, because I will have to revisit the book, but I do remember there were stories of how on occasion the masters would give the slaves a reprieve. But whatever it could be. It could be for worship, holidays, what have you. There would be moments, I wouldn't doubt brief moments, but moments when the slaves were allowed to have some autonomy on the plantation, some kind of celebratory deal. If it was Christmas for master, then the Christmas would trickle down to the slaves. So when there was an occasion for slaves to dress up, you know, they were wearing all kinds of rags and that kind of thing. But with the rags, and Captain Kirk can talk about this as well, because he mentioned this when it comes down to the cuisine. You know, we were fed scraps, but we were able to make these scraps through African-American, or I should say in this case, African ingenuity. We made these scraps into delicacies, even though they were scraps. And the same thing went with the clothing styles. So it's very fascinating to read these stories as to how the white slave owners looked at these slaves and how they were able to make themselves look presentable. They were able to showcase a fashion sense back then, and they looked at them with a bit of, I guess they were fascinated. They were fascinated. Even though they were slaves, you could say, obviously, looked down at black folk, they still didn't understand how they were able to express themselves. So they expressed themselves, and this happens to this day, where certain things are picked up. And you know what I mean. Certain styles are picked up coming from the African and, through extension, African-American expression, how these things are picked up. Also, another book that I'm in the middle of reading, and this book is pretty fascinating as well, it's called The Black History of the White House. The Black History of the White House by Clarence Lussane, L-U-S-A-N-E, L-U-S-A-N-E. And I was listening to a interview on, I believe it was Pacifica Radio, maybe 2 weeks ago, and the book's been out since 2010, but I believe it has been put for download as well as paperback. So now, you know, we know what happens, folks, that once it comes out in hardcover, then, you know, it almost gets a new life once it's available for download or for paperback. Anyway, the book is fascinating and essentially encapsulates what the black community was like during the nascent period of this country, and the black community's relationship with the White House, and also remember, folks, there were a number of different capitals of the United States. It wasn't always D.C. New York was a capital at one time. Pennsylvania was a capital at one time, and I believe Virginia was a capital, and then D.C. So there were moments in history where black folk were intricately involved in the goings-on with the White House, whether as servants or as you know, to this day. I mean, this book literally goes from the slaves that were owned by George Washington to Michelle Obama. So when you think about that, I mean, this is kind of a no-brainer, but there should be a book called The Black History of the White House, because the fact that we're talking about a full-circle deal, a full-circle extravaganza between slavery, the beginnings of this country, and then to having a black family in the White House. I would implore our listenership again, The Black History of the White House, Clarence Lussane. I'm in the middle of reading this thing now. I actually downloaded it on my phone. Let me get the captain in on this. Captain, any thoughts?
Well, you know what they always say about his story, his story. You know, now it might be time for us to put out our story instead of call it his story. So this is very important. This is very important. This is something that's absolutely necessary, and it's very much well needed. This is things that, you know, that are need to be known inside the black community. They need to know the goings on, so to speak. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, well, listen, after that misstep with Lil Wayne and Emmett Till, we're not as well-versed in our own history as we need to be. We're sorrowly. We are in some bad shape. So, I mean, that was the, you know, if it gets that bad, where we can make, you know, disparaging remarks about the perhaps the greatest civil rights victim on wax. And it, to me, that's the end of the civilization, which is this country. So, anyway, let's go to the top. Time is a point. I want to talk about this. Let me put you on hold for a moment, Captain. Captain, if you haven't guessed, folks, he's out in the field. I want to talk about this, well, several controversies that are interconnected, revolving around blackface. It doesn't stop, folks. I'm very honest on the mic. I'm very honest on the mic. And when I say certain things, you better believe I believe what I say. It's not shtick. So what I'm about to say about this minstrel thing, it's troubling. It is troubling when you hear about blackface. But I see so many things that are affecting our communities, our black and brown communities, and I guess I see it for what it really is. It really is ignorance. It is silly. It's very silly. So I guess on some level, it's difficult for me to work up a dander about this thing. I think it's important to be vigilant about it, but I guess I might have mentioned this before. You know, we have a black family in the White House. We have accomplished many things, although I do rail against some of the things that are dysfunctional in our community. But we have accomplished a lot. So it becomes very juvenile on the part of some that choose to go into this whole costuming of blackness. The fact that we need to – that there's a perception that the physicality of blackness is something that can be made into a costume. So I'm always just weirded out. I don't understand it on some level. It's crazy to me. Anyway, two stories interconnected revolving around blackface. For those who are unfamiliar with the term blackface, it dates back to the early 1800s. It dates back to minstrelsy. It dates back to whites. Again, this is the slavery period. Whites that in their quest to parody black idioms, in their quest to parody blacks, they would put on literally black makeup or black chalk and talk in an exaggerated vernacular that was likened to black people. They would put ruby red lipstick on or some kind of red thing, rouge or what have you, on their lips to exaggerate the full lips of black folk, that kind of thing. So for whatever reason, 200 and something years after the beginnings of minstrelsy, we still see it. And it has become so diabolical, folks. It has become so diabolical that you have black minstrels as well. Burt Williams comes to mind during the early 20th century. So in this case, there's a controversy with a French magazine called Numero, a fashion magazine, Numero France. And they had a piece or a spread entitled African Queen, or an African Queen editorial. It showcased a 16-year-old white model, young woman, Andrea Harton. And she's in complete blackface, but it's not minstrel blackface per se, not, you know, with, you know, pitch black. She's been bronzed to give the impression that she's a black person. She was submitted to you to give you the impression that she's a black woman. I mean, if honestly, if you didn't know, if someone didn't tell you that she wasn't black, you might not have recognized it, because she's got a little fuller features. She's got the whole garb, and it says African Queen. If you didn't know, you just glanced at it. You said, oh, just a black woman, an attractive black woman at that. But then you do find out that this was allegedly something that the powers that be, I guess it's more specifically the photographer, Sebastian Kim, Mr. Sebastian Kim, He's backtracking on this now, folks. Now he's saying that he thought this was for something else. He didn't know this was going to be for something called the African Queen. I can read this specifically. I want the captain to come in a minute. But he says, this is his formal statement now, now that there's a hullabaloo shutting out the Oracle. He's got a thing about me using the term hullabaloo, but hullabaloo. Anyway, it says, I would like to apologize. This is from Mr. Sebastian, the photographer. I would like to apologize for any misunderstanding around my recent photos for Numero France. It was never my intention, nor Numero's, to portray a black woman in this story. Our idea and concept for this fashion shoot was based on 60s characters of Talitha Getty, Farouchka, and Marissa Berenson with Middle Eastern and Moroccan fashion inspiration. We at no point attempted to portray an African woman by painting her skin black. We wanted a tanned and golden skin to be showcased as part of the beauty aesthetic of this shoot. It saddens me that people would interpret this as a mockery of race. I believe that the very unfortunate title, African Queen, which I was not aware of prior to publication, did a lot to further people's misconceptions about these images. It was certainly never my intention to mock or offend anyone, and I wholeheartedly apologize to anyone who was offended. Sincerely, Sebastian Kemp. Captain, what's going on? What's going on? There's a second story, too. I'll mention that as well. But...
Well, what you have in circa 2013 is that the powers that be do not get it. And also, the way information travels, it travels very fast. You throw a rock in England at 2 o'clock. Within 10 minutes over here in New York, they know about it. So information travels very fast in the modern day era. So now if this was 1970, 1980, you may get away with it. But now that we have the internet, you have people on Skype, everything else passing around, which is, you know, also via through the internet, you cannot get away with these type of things. And the problem is that the powers that be, they impress upon their thought process on everybody else. The decisions come down from the top. It would have been real simple, if you're thinking correctly, just to use a black model. Nothing more, nothing less. If you're thinking, if you understand what kind of world you really are in. They're not the only magazine to get in trouble for something like this. Or should I say, not really in trouble, where people are speaking out, bringing attention to the situation. They're not the only one. It happens with others. So what is going on? It's just the mentality of the powers that be. It's that mindset that these individuals that make the decisions have. Back over to you, Sir Raffinerd.
Yeah, you know, listen, folks have a problem with me, especially when I start to dig in on this kind of stuff, because, you know, I don't always like to have us positioned as victims. And we have to stop doing the blackface routine ourselves, Captain. That's problematic as well. I think we're at this point, and we have been at this point, where we become so comfortable in poking fun at ourselves in the public sphere that others feel comfortable in joining in. You know, whether it's the N-word, whether it's the hip-hop music and the dances and all kinds of just silliness, that a lot of money is being generated because of what we are doing, that it has become very comfortable for others to kind of not know where the line is. Now, there's another gentleman who's a New York assemblyman who, for the Jewish holiday of Purim, he wore a costume, almost like a Halloween type of costume, Dove Hikind, who's pretty well known locally, Democratic assemblyman, by the way. For those who are, I said this before also, Captain, for this whole belief that it's always Republicans that are racist, it really is evenly spread out if one were to do the research and really be observant, have some discernment. You'd see this stuff is really making the rounds and it has been spread out across the aisle, regardless of what bench you belong to, what bent you may have, conservative, Democratic, liberal, Republican, what have you. Anyway, Dub Hykind, he's backpedaling. He didn't think that, you know, he said in his mind, this goes back to what you were talking about, Captain. In his mind, he did not believe what he was doing was racist. But on a Facebook page during this Jewish holiday, where others were in costume, but his costume of choice was to darken his skin, to have a basketball in his hand, you know, a goatee. I think he has a goatee naturally, but a goatee, a big outrageous Afro wig, and now he didn't. Sometimes folks try to double down. He tried to double down at first, too much heat. Now he's apologizing. And when someone asked him, would you do it again, he said that yes, but then he's saying no now. But I'm just curious as to what is the appeal? What is it about blackness that is such a peculiarity for folks where it has to be a costume? Why are my features to be costumed? That's what I don't get it. In the modern era, in the 21st century, it's just silly as hell. It's just silly. We have a caller, Captain. Let's go to the calls, open up the lines, get some other impressions. Again, folks, we are live. It's not Memorex, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Let's go to the lines and see what's going on. Caller, welcome to Afternoon Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 708. What's up?
Hey. Hello?
Yes. Yeah. Hi.
Hey, what's up, Captain? What's up, D-Bird? How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Who is this, by the way?
My name is Paris Senior. I'm a friend of you all from Facebook, but I've been listening to you all for almost a year. And what would you say, D-Bird?
Terrific.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much I really don't have too much to comment on what you're just speaking on because I just tuned in, but I just wanted to just let you guys know that you became a part of my podcast experience, really, and I just really love what you guys do, and I try to put my friends on to you guys, definitely with the comic shop, because I have a best friend, and he's really into comics, and I'm trying to get him to listen to the comic shop and things like that, so I just want to just let you know that you guys are doing real good work, and I appreciate it. I appreciate the different lanes and the different ways that you are presenting different viewpoints and different ways of thinking, different forms of blackness, and I just want to let you all know, man, you're doing real good, and I appreciate it.
Well, listen, man, I want to tell you something. Your words mean a lot to us. I'm pretty sure the captain feels the same way. And let me tell you something. It was a rough road. We've been doing it for a long time. We're trying to, of course, you know, go to a different level beyond the Internet. But even if we remain on the Internet, we feel that there's such a need for a different type of discussion. Everyone doesn't have to agree with us. But we should at least hear other kinds of music, other kinds of thoughts, other kinds of culture, so people know that we're not in the same, this one bad thing. I'm very troubled with this idea that we all think the same way, and then that's the end of the conversation. This is probably why people are wearing blackface in 2013, because they figure we can go for the LPO because you folks don't know any better.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, D-Bird, I listen to you when I'm at work, man. When I listen, I work two jobs, and my second job I listen to the podcast. And it's I get edification. I really do, man, on both sides. The comic shop, when I'm learning a little bit more about what's going on in the comic book world, and Afro-Nerd, you know, when you're talking about different things, man, it's beautiful. And I just wanted to just give you a shout-out and let, you know, both of you guys know that you're reaching a young 35-year-old man over here in Northwest Indiana. Appreciate it.
Sounds good. Sounds good, man. Sounds real good. Keep it up, and we appreciate you even spreading the word. We really appreciate that. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Listen, right. Captain, I think we should go to a groove. That's what we do. We do try to elucidate, educate, and groove if we can. I think there's actually some new Prince music, although I play the hell out of him. I mean, I play everybody, but he's my go-to person as far as music. I listen to everything, but there's always a go-to person. The Oracle, his go-to person is Wilson Pickett, Wicked Pickett. Yeah, that's his go-to person. My go-to person is Prince, and maybe under him might be James Brown. But I mean, there's people I go to. So without further ado, let's go to a quick groove. Let's see, I think there's bear with me, folks. I want to give you something new. Now, why can't I find this thing? Live radio, folks. My apologies. All right. This is Why can't I find this thing? All right, you know what? This is actually a classic B-side. I wanted to give you something new, but for the sake of time. This is Horny Toad, Little Risque. Horny Toad by Prince. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. Okay, folks, once again, that was a B-side classic. For those who are unfamiliar with the term B-side, this is amazing. I mean, I actually want to talk about this. Once upon a time when you had records, especially 45s, the flip side of that record would be another song that more than likely was not on the album. So this is where the talent comes in, folks. When you would, you know, Stevie Wonder had this. I mean, you name all the top flight artists had these B-side singles where sometimes the B-side was better than the A-side. You know, the side of the 45, you could play on both sides, A and B. The A was the commercial hit. The B might have been some throwaway song. These guys they were so talented. They had literally, you know, throwaway music. And they would throw on something that they decided, you know, maybe for whatever reason, they decided not to put on the album, but oftentimes a DJ, before the DJs were also, you know, when they were less commercially controlled, they would play, hey, let's just see what's this for kicks. Let's see what's going on with the B-side. And so many times the B-side was excellent. So that was the B-side single. I forgot what was on it, was the original. Might have been Little Red Corvette, I'm not sure. But that was the B-side of a Prince hit. I think it might have been Little Red Corvette. All right, anyway, just anecdotal information. Stuff that just gets me. I find very curious. There's this thing. I don't know if you folks heard about this. This is, of course, the Afternoon Show, so I'm going to mention things that aren't so racially specific. Everything isn't about black. We want everyone to listen to Afternoon Radio. Obviously, we are men of color, so we will talk about things that are of interest to African Americans, but that really are of interest to everyone. Anyway, I'm hearing, and I don't know why this hasn't been thought of before. There's a Australian billionaire, Clive Palmer. He's the chairman of Blue Star Line, and it's a sizable shipping company. He is proposing to revitalize the Titanic. He wants to make, I think he's not wants to, I think he's actually in the works in doing this. He wants to make a replica of the infamous 1912 Titanic, which everyone knows. You saw the movie, Leonardo DiCaprio. It hit an iceberg, and thousands of folks died. It was, you know, it's talked about to this day. It's amazing that certain tragedies are so historical and so profound that they will never leave us. You know, the Hindenburg, the infamous blimp, that will never leave us. And Titanic, it was allegedly the largest cruise ship of its kind at that time, extremely luxurious for its time. So he is proposing, he has the blueprints, proposing to make a replica of this Titanic, calling it, of course, the Titanic II. Now, there's going to be some modernization, because at the same time, they didn't even have AC back then, but if you saw James Cameron, because James Cameron is obsessed with the Titanic, I wouldn't be surprised if Clive Palmer isn't picking his brain, the director's brain, because he knows a lot about the Titanic, to have this thing, to bring this back to life. Now, he's also using the term unsinkable. That's not a good word to use. Titanic, the original Titanic was considered unsinkable. We know that not to be true. And I think the last living survivor from the Titanic, you had children that were on the Titanic in the early part of the 20th century. So it's conceivable that they could have lived to this day. And I think within the last few years, especially subsequent to the movie, an elderly woman that was a child at the time who survived the Titanic. So the Titanic is still very, you know, it's funny how people talk about slavery. Oh, it's so long ago. But heck, we just buried within the last few years a survivor of the Titanic. And we're talking about now almost 101 years to its sinking. So it's very funny how people talk about history. Let me bring in the captain to get his impressions on this thing. I'm intrigued by it. I have to say, I think he already has folks lined up. They're saying that they're setting sights for 2016 for this thing to sail out of Southampton, England. Let me bring the captain in. I guess I'm like everyone else. I am intrigued by the Titanic. I believe we even covered a story, because there's always another thing about where there are people of color on Titanic, and we did mention there was a Haitian engineer from France who died on the Titanic. So there were black folk on the Titanic. Captain, what are your thoughts on this? This Titanic II.
Now, here's the thing. See what happens when you have huge money? When you have huge money, you could build infrastructure. And once you build infrastructure, as you think it, you can do it. Let me repeat that. Once you have huge money, you can build infrastructure. And as you think it, you can do it. Here's a man with a whole lot of money. Whole lot of money. Thought about something and said, this is what I want to do. And it's in process. So that alone is very impressive. This is what happens. This is power. This is why people say money is power. So this, and that, now let's look at it also a little bit further now. Let's look at it a little bit further now. He goes and builds this Titanic. What else does it do? Not only people go to see, this sets up also things in the movie industry. Now there's more movies being built about, you know, being done about the Titanic. It just sets things off. It gets everybody, just as the great Afro Nerd said, they're intrigued about it. Let's see what's going on. People start buying books. They want to know more about, you know, the Titanic, what really happened, what really took place. Because, you know, as they always say, when it comes to his story, they always say what you're supposed to say is this, according to historical record, because you really don't know unless you were really there, so you put the onus on historical record. So it makes people start digging in to really see what truly and truly happened. So that's all I wanted to say. It's very intriguing. I feel the same way about that you feel about it, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Well, listen, Captain, it's an obvious money grab. I have to respect that in some ways. I'm going to read something briefly from CNN.com. I always want to give information to our audience, and it does deal with, let's be honest, the public does have a fascination with the macabre. Excluding myself per se, there are some folks that just are intrigued by death and dire circumstances, and they want to relive certain things. Now, this is what's going down with this with Mr. Palmer. It says, Palmer claims Titanic 2 will be the safest cruise ship in the world. Okay, we've heard that before. When it sets sail in 2016 from Southampton, England, bound for New York, following the ill-fated Titanic's original planned route. That's another thing, too. They plan to replicate, not only replicate the ship, they want to replicate the route. The press event held at New York's Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum was part of an ongoing campaign to promote the Titanic 2 launch. Blue Star held a Titanic 2 gala dinner at the Venetian in Macau this month to drum up interest among wealthy Chinese. As reported, here we go, that's another thing too. They got Chinese folk, because we're indebted to them. They're curious about this. As reported last year, Palmer has commissioned a Chinese shipyard to rebuild the replica. The mining magnate won't say exactly how much money he sunk into the project, but he doesn't appear worried about those who might be leery about boarding such a dubiously named vessel. Palmer says he's received offers of up to $1 million for passage on the ship's maiden voyage. Captain.
Wow. Wow.
People, I'm telling you.
Just for one ride. $1 million. Wow. Just to say, I was on the Titanic.
Now, let's hope that history doesn't repeat itself. That's all I got to say.
Well, it runs into an iceberg. It's going down, regardless of what the designer says, what they say.
I read somewhere else, I think someone asked him, is this unsinkable? And he said, well, if you put a hole in it, you know, it will sink. But he said he's going to take all the, you know, first of all, the original ship, you know, quite famously did not have enough lifeboats. This one has enough lifeboats for the passengers. There were just not enough lifeboats for the initial voyage. So according to what he's saying, now listen, we just saw what happened to Carnival Cruises.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that was a horror show. Sort of. I mean, it's a horror show, but I hate to blacken everything up for you, Captain. But it did come to my mind. I don't want to blacken everything. But you heard all the complaints of the Carnival Cruises, how people had to defecate in bags and stuff. Hey, heck, you know, go back 250 years ago, we were defecating on each other in shackles.
This is true.
Now, that's a cruise, my friend. That's a cruise. Those folks, when I first heard it, you're pikers. I'm just saying. I have to be honest. This was in my head. I felt for them. But I said, you know what? We had a different kind of cruise. I think our friend from Chi-Town is in abeyance. I think he wants to give us a little news on a special interview he's doing. Let me bring him on in.
Yes. Hey, are you there?
Yes.
Yes.
What's
yes,
up?
We are.
No, I got some news just been released. Django Unchained is coming out on DVD April 16th.
Oh, terrific. I'll pick that up.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, you can already now pre-order it on Amazon. But it's coming out through Anchor Bay Video on both Blu-ray and standard DVD on April 16th. I assume they haven't released the features yet, but they will probably most likely will have on the original 192-minute cut.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Has it hit all international, you know, territories?
Oh, absolutely, it's hit already.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. All right. All right. Just make
you want to know how much is made internationally so far?
How much?
Right now, I would say within the realm of $200 million.
Okay.
Wow. I thought it was more than that. I thought it was approaching 300.
No, worldwide is already past 300.
Yeah,
oh,
okay.
Yeah. But 200 domestically.
No. I'm talking about internationally. Domestically right now is done just under $160 million.
Wow.
Wow.
And foreign right now, and this is actually lower, it's probably higher, but right now the foreign is $221,600,000.
I want to talk to you about something else in a moment. It's Django related, but tell us about your news, your special meeting tomorrow.
Well, okay. Tomorrow I'm doing an interview with, okay, folks, sit down, Halle Berry.
Okay.
All right.
Now, I've met her before, maybe about 5 years ago. She's a really great interview. She really is. She's very thoughtful, gives intelligent answers, interesting person. She's not, you know, people want to bash her and say, she's crazy. You know, her private life is her private life, you know. I probably can't imagine she probably is a piece of work to deal with. But, you know, but if you one-on-one, she's really interesting. And she is really one of the very few people I've met, famous persons I've met, who looks exactly the way they do on the screen.
Mm, okay. That's
most
good.
People, usually, they're shorter, they're skinnier, they're taller. You'll be shocked, you know. But she looks exactly the way she does.
Wow. You know what? Again, folks, we're talking to Sergio Mims of Shadow and Act. Definitely check out Shadow and Act via IndieWire. What were your impressions of the Oscars? I want to ask you because, actually, I got some emails with Quvenzhané. Am I pronouncing the name correctly? Quvenzhané Wallace and the C-word controversy with The Onion. That's one
okay,
thing.
Okay, that's The Onion. That was a stupid, ugly thing for them to do, you know. They apologized for it, but, you know, they apologized to the Academy. They didn't apologize to her or her parents. But that was idiotic. That was stupid. In terms of the show, okay, you've been reading, everybody is dumping on Seth MacFarlane, right? And everybody's saying it was sexist, he was crude, he was this, he was that. Okay, he's Seth MacFarlane. That, you know, the guy who, the Family Guy, the guy who created Ted, that's what you're going to get. He's not going to do Billy Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do Seth MacFarlane. And actually, in many ways, it was tame Seth MacFarlane. People who evidently were shocked don't know who this guy really is.
Mm-hmm.
People say it's frat boy humor. That's exactly what it is. Now, the reason they got him is because they said, oh, they wanted him because he can sing, he can dance. No, they got him because they're always trying to get a younger audience.
And they got
him. You know, they're always trying to get a younger audience. Ted grossed $600 million worldwide. Worldwide.
Wow, I don't know that much. Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's phenomenal. It's maybe one of the biggest comedy hits ever in film history. It could be maybe the biggest. I'm not sure. But it, when you make that kind of money, and of course when you have a show like the Oscars, which have a worldwide audience, it made logic sense to get him. The ratings were up 20% this year. Now people will say it was more because of the movies. The, you know, more popular movies were nominated this year. In years when you have movies that weren't popular, that didn't do well in the box office, people tend to tune out. There may be an argument to that. But the ratings were still up 20%. And it was particularly up between 18 to like 35-year-old men, the kind of guys who like Seth MacFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you want to attack him, and that's what you're going to get. He says he's not coming back. I don't blame him. You know, I'm surprised he accepted it in the first place. I'm really surprised. It's a job that nobody wants. It's a job that nobody wants. Tina Fey has already said she doesn't want it. There's already talk about trying to get her for next year. She's already said she's not interested. It's an impossible job to do. No matter what you do, you're going to be criticized for it. I think they should just have having, you know, Bob Hope is dead. Johnny Carson is dead, you know. Those guys are gone. You can't get people like that anymore. So I don't know what they're going to do. You know, right now, I don't know who they're going to get. There's no, I don't know who
will
fight for that role.
Say what? They're always going to go for a younger demographic. He said Bill Cosby. I mean, it's not like Bill. They're always going to test for some kind of younger demographic.
Yeah, but then, you know, they tried James Franco. That tanked. They tried Chris Rock a couple years ago. That was dreadful because they basically tied him up, gagged him and told him. And the problem is that you want to be edgy. At the same time, you got to be sort of like respectful to all the old people. And that's a balancing act that really nobody can do. Really nobody can do that.
We got about 5 minutes remaining, just quickly. What are your thoughts about, like, now, Christoph Waltz won Best Supporting Actor?
Yes.
But, and also, I think Tarantino, did he get Best Screenplay? Original Screenplay?
Best Original Screenplay, yes.
Right. But in some circles, people did feel that Django should have gotten Best Picture. What are your thoughts about
that? It was impossible. Impossible. The film's too controversial. I'm happy that Christoph Waltz got it. If I had my way, they really should have nominated Leonardo DiCaprio. He was amazing in that role. He was amazing in that part. And
what do you think that was about? I agree with you. What was that about then?
The role was too controversial. It was too controversial. The reason Argo won, which is the most overrated, that and Silver Linings Playbook. Silver Linings Playbook, the message behind that movie is that if you got a mental illness, find a hot chick to fall in love with, she'll cure you. That's the message of that movie. Now, the reason Argo won very fast is because it makes Hollywood look good. The voters who voted for that movie like that film, they love that film because it makes them look all good and patriotic. That's why they like it. It's hardly overrated. As somebody said, back in the 70s, movies like Argo would have been a dime a dozen. He's right. You know, was much better. Gone Baby Gone was much better than Argo. You know, go ahead.
One other question that's entertainment related, actually, getting off the Oscars for a minute. There's a brewing controversy, actually, in New York with a high school rendition of The Wiz. I don't know if you heard about this, but I believe it's North Syracuse High School, where the student body is predominantly white, but there is a black presence there. There are black students at this high school, and the drama teacher is doing a rendition of The Wiz without casting a black cast. So now the black students are angry, and people are, you know, it's controversial, I guess, in the sense that, well, why aren't you having black people do The Wiz? And I think we're at one of those points now. I don't know if they can be angry about that. I mean, The Wiz is already based on The Wizard of Oz, which is I mean, I don't know if you can say something is white and something is black. Although The Wiz is an African American play, what's to stop whites from doing The Wiz?
Well, you have a point, but, you know, you're talking about something. There are certain things that black people like to think is ours. This is ours. And the Wiz is, you know, in quotation mark, is ours. You know, it's sort of like the same way I feel when I see a white guy or a white woman trying to wear dreadlocks. You know, every time I see that, I like, please, don't try. That's ours. You know, there are some things that culturally are ours. Now, you're right. You know, The Wiz is based on the Wizard of Oz. But, you know, I have to say that I think the person who's doing this play is a little tone deaf. You know, right, they do have the right to do it. You can say that The Wiz can be done by anybody. That's true. But there is a sort of cultural thing to The Wiz that a lot of people like to accept. And sometimes you have to accept that. It's sort of like, the Brady Bunch is very white. You know, it's sort of like, gee, you know, it's white. You know, you can't get whiter than the Brady Bunch. I never saw the appeal of the Brady Bunch, except that, like, it was really, really white. Or like Napoleon Dynamite. Boy, that's about as white as you can get. You know, there's just certain cultural things. Hello?
Hey, D-Burg.
I'm sorry, I was on my mic. I'm sorry about that.
Right.
There are some folks that would argue that the presidency is a white thing.
Hey, and that's why Obama's having so much trouble right now.
you follow what I'm saying? I mean, it's a slippery slope, I think, with that.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on this, Captain? We got about a minute.
Well, I agree, you know. Oh. I agree that the fact that, you know, The Wiz is based on, you know, the Wizard of Oz. I also agree with the fact that, you know, you do have the right to do anything that you want. You can make it white, you can make it Latin, you can make it whatever you want to do, even though Latin is an ethnicity. You can do anything that you want to do at this given point, and it is a very slippery slope. But I can understand where it becomes controversial, because there's a feeling among us that we will definitely feel that we do own this, even though we don't.
I don't think we do, because you're essentially saying that the Wizard of Oz is for white people and the Wiz is for black people, but the reason why you did the Wiz is because the Wizard of Oz is for white people. So it becomes a circular argument.
Right,
yeah,
right, exactly.
We'll
exactly.
Pick it up,
right. It's sort of like there used to be a Miss Black America. Why? Because you never saw black women in a Miss Black America pageant for most of its history. Now, you see black women in Miss America pageants, then, you know, it's irrelevant now. You don't even do a Miss Black America anymore. I don't even think they even do Miss America anymore. So, you know, it's sort of like there are things that are culturally ours. You know, now whether you think that's good or bad, that's the way of the world. There are some things that are culturally ours and some things that are culturally theirs. Now, you can argue once again, that's not the way maybe things should be. Classical music is for everybody. It's not just for white people. You know, just like you can argue that hip-hop is not just for black people. It's for everybody.
Yeah, but you know what? We're going to have to table this for next Sunday.
It's a good argument.
We're already off air, so to speak. Gentlemen, good real. We'll pick it up on Sunday. Thanks again, sir.
All
appreciate
right.
it. This is
okay.
My Jamaican Guy, the great Grace Jones. See you guys on Sunday.
Thank you.